Hartman is excellent. He's bright. He's personable.
Tom Hartman on Air America Radio. Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It's Friday, the 6th of April, and as such, as is always the case on the first hour of our show, our Brunch with Bernie segment, Senator Bernie Sanders. By the way, a heads up, in the second hour of our program, we're going to be debating Mark Morano about, he's the communications director for Senator Inhofe's staff, about carbon offsets. But our first hour, Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, neither a Democrat nor a Republican. I think of him as America's senator, and he will be taking your calls at 866-303-2270 in just a few minutes. Any topics you want to bring up, Bernie gets these calls unscreened and unscripted for all practical purposes. I throw them on the air, and he takes them, and I continue to tip my hat to you, Bernie, for doing that. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. It's great to be with you.
A lot of issues on the table right now. Global warming at the top.
There are a lot of issues. I understand you'll be talking to a staff member of Senator Inhofe's committee. And Senator Inhofe is on the Energy Committee, and he is one of the people who believes that global warming is a quote-unquote hoax. Fortunately, we have a new chairperson of that committee, Barbara Boxer, who does not believe it's a hoax. We are moving forward aggressively on global warming legislation that would, among other things, reduce greenhouse gas emissions in 2020 to 1990 levels and then lower them by 80% from 1990 by the year 2050. But having said that, we have an enormous amount of work to do in terms of addressing the crisis of global warming. We are far behind many other industrialized countries. If we are not aggressive and work with the rest of the world, what this report from the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change suggests is there'll be cataclysmic changes around the world, especially in the poorer countries. What we want to do is to move our country toward energy efficiency. We've got to deal with transportation. We have to substantially raise CAFE standards. We've got to give incentives to people to get into hybrids and to electric cars. We certainly have got to move much more aggressively in terms of solar paneling. With the exception of California, we are doing very little in terms of solar paneling. There is now a lot of potential for reasonably inexpensive small wind turbines in rural areas. We've got to move on that. With the exception of ethanol, and that's controversial because of the energy cost in producing that from corn, we've got to make great strides forward in terms of biofuels. So there is a lot of work that has to be done to break our dependency on fossil fuels and become more energy efficient. And as we go forward in that area, I think we can create millions of good-paying jobs. So this is one of the great, obviously, environmental issues of our time. It's also an economic issue. And I hope that we can move our country in a very, very, very different direction in this area from where George Bush and his administration have taken us. So this is just a big, big issue for some of us on the Energy Committee and on the Environmental Committee.
And turn it into an opportunity issue.
Absolutely.
Before you guys in the Senate right now are a variety of issues, education, health care, Iraq. You want to take a shot at those?
There are a million issues coming down the pike. I just want to very briefly give an overview. I know a lot of people who have kids in primary, secondary school are concerned about No Child Left Behind. That bill is being reauthorized. I've just talked with a bunch of teachers here in the state of Vermont who have very, very serious concerns about that bill. The degree to which it forces teachers to teach for tests rather than teach to the whole child. The inadequate funding we're receiving for No Child Left Behind and special education, which is driving up property taxes here in Vermont and all over this country. So those are issues that are coming down the pike that people should pay attention to. Health care issues, we're going to be getting into prescription drugs pretty soon. My own view is that Medicare should be negotiating with the drug companies in terms of prescription drug legislation, Part D Medicare, and that we can lower the cost very substantially to the government as we simplify that program. I also very much believe in what we call reimportation of prescription drugs, that pharmacists, individuals, prescription drug distributors should be able to purchase safe, affordable, FDA-approved medicine from other countries, and in doing that, we can drive down the cost of prescription drugs. I know that there are a lot of veterans, Tom, who are listening to your show, and I want to say that I think the new Congress has heard the message that the VA has been grossly underfunded by Bush for many, many years. And I'm on both the Veterans Committee and the Budget Committee, and we have given over to the Appropriations Committee a request for $3.5 billion more for veterans than Bush had proposed. And this is necessary in order to deal with the huge influx of soldiers we're going to be having from Iraq and Afghanistan. 24,000 wounded, even more, are going to come back with PTSD, traumatic brain injury. We have got to bring into the system the older veterans who Bush threw out, so-called Category 8 veterans, who have an income of over $27,000 a year. To deny them VA health care access is wrong. So that whole issue of improving the system and making it more accessible to our new veterans as well as our older veterans is extremely important. Obviously, the Iraq issue is out there very big time. Right now, there will be a conference committee between the House and the Senate to work out various aspects of the supplemental budget bill, which includes language to bring our troops home from Iraq, which I strongly support. The president has indicated that he will veto that legislation. We will then see what happens as that bill is rewritten. My own view is we should make sure that our soldiers have all the equipment and armor they need as we bring them home, And we want to do that as soon as possible. There is going to be a new agricultural bill being worked on, a very important issue for rural America and states like the state of Vermont and many other rural states. And the fight there, to me, is to make sure that we continue, try to protect family-based agriculture in America. We're losing every day large numbers of family farms because of low prices and because of the power of big agribusiness, the vertical integration of agriculture. Fewer and fewer manufacturers of food have just tremendous leverage over family farmers. We're trying to emphasize buy local, organic farming. A lot of discussion now in terms of global warming as to how our farmers can start producing biofuel crops such as switchgrass, canola, soy, in order to be used as fuel. We see that as important in fighting against global warming, also bringing income into family farms. In terms of labor, there's still discussions going on about raising the minimum wage, but hopefully that will be agreed to fairly soon. We'll have at least the $7.25 minimum wage. Some of us are also strongly supporting a card checkoff provision to make it easier for workers who want to belong to unions to be able to do so, because right now it is just very, very hard for workers who want to join a union. They get kind of taken into the back room and threatened by their employers. So that's just a quick overview of some of the issues that people will be reading about in the coming months.
I'm curious, just a little pulling the screen back and looking at how the sausage is made. You spent nearly two decades in the House of Representatives. Now you're in the Senate. And it's been a while since we've had this conversation. The last time we had it, I think, was the first week or two that you were a senator. How are these bodies different? And
very
what
different.
What do we as consumers or as citizens rather need to know about how we should be interacting with a member of the House versus a member of the Senate, and how we can most affect their behavior?
Well, as I've said many times before, the power of big money in Washington is just extraordinary. They have very skilled, smart lobbyists whose organizations and people in the organizations contribute huge amounts of money. But what I would say is that when people begin to stand up and write letters and make telephone calls and demand meetings with their members of Congress or members of the Senate, they can have a huge impact. Because a lot of what takes place assumes that the American people don't know what's going on. And that's often the case if you watch television or you read the average newspaper, who more often than not miss the most important stories they're into gossip and sensationalism and fundraising for Hillary Clinton, but they miss the really important story. So you would be surprised at a few hundred letters saying, look, I can't afford to send my kid to college. I'm middle class. Cost of college is going up. Why are you giving tax breaks to billionaires rather than increasing funding for Pell Grants? Something as simple as all that. So the assumption is that people are not involved, and if people do get involved, it can make a real difference in the political process.
Great. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. He'll be taking your calls next. Our number, 866-303-2270, TomHartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, it's the Tom Hartman Program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with you. 16 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Program.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
21 minutes past the hour, and the place for being progressive has never felt so good. Tom Hartman with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line, taking your calls, and Chris in Carson City, California, listening on Kate Talk. You are up and live with Bernie Sanders.
Thank you, Tom. And Senator Bernie Sanders, thank you for being the person that you are and representing this country so well.
I watched you
on the documentary, Orwell Rose in His Grave.
Yep.
And I really think you were very, you know, I want to commend you for the job you did when I watched that documentary. We've had the consolidation of American media, and the same corporations, instead of doing its job and being the fourth estate to be the checks and balance of that keeps our politicians and corporations honest, have the corporations under the ruse of reducing costs have watered down and downsized news departments, which is code word for if you don't report on exactly what and how we tell you, you're out of here. You've had glaring stories like that deserved to lead newscasts, and I'm a little nervous, all you get is Anna Nicole and Britney
right.
Spears.
Right. You got it.
And isn't it strange that when Republicans want to get government off our backs, the first thing they go after is welfare. That's the safety net of every government on earth, but they never speak of corporate welfare, which is actually costing Americans far greater than any woman trying to feed her kids.
Well, Chris, you've raised just a lot of very important issues. Let me deal with the media one. And this is a huge issue because it impacts on every other issue. I mean, certainly one of the reasons we are in this disastrous war in Iraq is the complete collapse of the American media in terms of playing a critical objective role rather than just being a cheerleader for the Bush administration. But the main point that you're making is that we're seeing smaller and smaller, fewer and fewer large media conglomerates owning and controlling what we see, hear, and read. And every year that number is becoming fewer. Major, major stories of huge consequence to the American people, such as the collapse of the middle class, the growing gap between the rich and the poor, et cetera, get very little discussion. Why, while somebody decides that Anna Nicole Smith or Britney Spears should be on the front pages of papers all over America, how you deal with this is not so easy, but it is an issue that my office is looking at. We are going to bring forth a major piece of legislation on media, which raises the question of what is the responsibility in terms of radio and television broadcasters who use the public airwaves. There was a communications bill passed in 1934 which talked about the responsibility of those people who are given public trust, given spectrum on the airwaves. And I think we have to revive that important discussion.
Kevin in Kansas City, Missouri, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
Hey, I wanted to make a comment. You know, Mr. Sanders, I'm sure you do a lot of great things for your state, but we can use you in the national elections. I think it's time that someone on an independent who's outstanding like you are with your credentials runs for President of the United States. I think Chuck Hagel would love to join a ticket that was truly independent. And if you didn't want to run as the top dog, maybe he could do it and you could join him and do whatever was necessary. But you know what? I got to say this. It's time that someone starts running in this country who cares about people. And everything that you said in your opening statements is more defining than anything I've heard from Hillary, anything I've heard from Barack Obama, anything that our president has done in the last few years. We've got an entire city that has never come back from what has been destroyed. And our president's first job is to take care of the United States of America, and he has done nothing for that city. I'll shut up and listen to you. But love you, man, and thank you for what you've done.
Hey, Kevin, thank you very much. Now, I was just elected to the Senate by the people of the state of Vermont, and that's where I'm going to stay in, but I appreciate the kind words. Kevin is obviously right. What we need is a president and a Congress that looks at the needs of ordinary people. What is going on with the middle class? Why is poverty increasing? Why are we losing millions of good-paying jobs? Why can't middle-class families afford to send their kids to college? Why are we the only nation in the industrialized world which does not guarantee health care to all of its people? Why is the gap between the rich and the poor growing? I mean, a million issues that are out there, which you hear very, very little discussion about. And what we have got to do is force that debate. We've got to break from a political perspective our dependency on big money, move toward public funding of elections so people can run for office without having to hustle money from the wealthy and the powerful.
Robbie in Memphis, Tennessee. We got about half a minute here, Robbie, before we've got to take a break. A quick one for Bernie?
Well, I was just curious. My father worked for, retired from, and then died from asbestos poisoning at Kaiser Aluminum. Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root, GE, all of them installed the lined pits with asbestos. They're allowed to file bankruptcy, and yet they're over in Iraq making billions of dollars. Is this legal?
Yeah. Well, you want to pick that up on the other side, Bernie?
We can discuss it. I'm not quite sure I heard the first part of Robbie's statement.
Okay, I'll give it back to you.
Yeah, let's go.
From the break.
Okay,
because it's a good question.
Yeah.
27 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. This is Senator Bernie Sanders, this entire hour taking your calls and questions right here on the Tom Hartman radio program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio. The Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
There's a price for freedom and a price for truth, and money doesn't bleed red, white, and blue.
Welcome back to the Real Free Speech Zone. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Leslie in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening on WPTT. Hey, Leslie, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm an occupational therapist, and I just have a quick question about Medicare. We all talk about the prescription plan. However, is anyone looking at the limitation that they've put on rehabilitation services for these people? Currently, as an outpatient therapist, I deal daily with people that are, you know, they're shorter length of stays in hospitals, and they have a limitation of $1,740 worth of rehab. Which, if you have suffered a stroke or have a hand injury or a shoulder injury, we all know that does not cover a full course of rehab. So these people are being discharged, not being independent in their daily activities or being able to care for themselves in some cases.
The answer to your question is, Leslie, some of us are looking at that issue and working with physical therapists to make sure that they can, in fact, fully treat the patients that they are working on. Sometimes If you look at Medicare, you look at Medicaid, the programs that are developed within those systems are just counterproductive. They don't make a whole lot of sense, and we waste money rather than save money.
Richard in Hendersonville, North Carolina. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Tom and Bernie. It's great to talk to you. I want to thank you for being forthright, honest, and having the integrity to be able to speak truth to power. We got to have somebody that's willing to do it.
Thank you.
As I lay here in bed, minor surgery yesterday, I'm kind of lucky because I'm covered. And I know a lot of people in this country aren't covered. But that really wasn't my question. My question is, what about John McCain and Lindsey Graham endangering the lives of hundreds of our soldiers so that they can have what is pretty much a glorified photo opportunity and say how wonderful the war in Iraq is going?
Well, let me just say very straightforwardly that I strongly disagree with McCain and Graham. Needless to say, I don't think the war is going terribly well. I think quite the opposite. I think we should never have gotten into that war in the first place. I think not only have we suffered a terrible loss of life and spent so much money on that war, but I think as a result of that war, what we're seeing is a growth of Al-Qaeda and international terrorism all over the world. And I think we've got to rethink our policy toward terrorism in the sense of getting out of Iraq, focusing on Islamic fundamentalism, winning over, if you like, the hearts and the minds of people, which cannot just be done through military power. So on this issue, I very strongly disagree with McCain and Graham.
Jerry in Long Island, New York. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my call. Yeah, with respect to the Iraq War funding legislation that Congress recently passed, I know you were commenting on it earlier, Senator, but there's an aspect to the situation that you've not yet commented on. For instance, it's been reported that even Senator Obama has said that eventually Congress will give Bush a clean piece of war funding legislation without any troop withdrawal deadlines in it. And so my question for you, Senator, simply is this. Will Congress eventually, and quite indefensibly, defy the will of the American people by giving Bush, in the end, all the war money he wants without any legally binding Senate or House troop withdrawal deadline attached to the money?
Well, I don't know what Congress will do, Jerry. As you know, in the Senate now, you have a a 50-49 split with Democrat, with me voting with the Democrats, making that 50. You have one Democrat who will vote with Republicans on the issue of Iraq, so we don't even have a majority there. We will win a couple of Republicans, so we will see what happens. But to my mind, simply giving the President of the United States unlimited amounts of money to continue this war indefinitely is wrong, and I will not support that approach.
Barbara in Seattle, Washington. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, thank you. My question has to do with the integrity of the elections, and you hit on that when you talked earlier about the public financing. And the last couple of weeks, there's been what I would call positioning of different states to move up their primaries. And I just feel like a little bit of manipulation in the end on who would be the front runner and whatever turns is the leader in those results of those races. And would there ever be any possibility that all the primaries could be held on the same day so that everybody gets a chance on the same day to vote for who they want? Thank you for your question.
That is a good question. I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican, so I'm not terribly much involved in the primary process. The main concern that I have now is to try to end the incredible amounts of money that are now going into the political process. It's clear by the amount of money that Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, others are raising that we're going to see more money in politics this year than we have ever seen before. I think the good news is that you're seeing states like Arizona, Maine, Connecticut, elsewhere moving toward public funding of state elections, seats in their own legislature and so forth. And I think that is a process that the Congress should learn from. My hope is that we can move toward public funding of elections, instant runoff, keeping the ballot boxes open longer on election day, so that we can strengthen democracy in our country.
Roger in Rhode Island, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. It's an honor to speak with you. You're a true hero. I have a quick question for you, and then I have a little longer one. First of all, I'm totally disabled and live on SSDI. When I signed up for Section 8 housing, which I'm eligible for, I was told that it could be up to 8 years before there would ever be any money available. And now that the Democrats are in, I'm hoping you take a look at that funding.
Let me just say that we certainly will. There is a major housing crisis in my state of Vermont, all over this country. People are backed up way back in terms of eligibility for Section 8, and that is an issue that some of us are going to take a very hard look at.
Tina in Los Angeles, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Oh, hi.
Tina?
Senator, I have a good independent question for you, I think. Can you hear me?
Yes,
sir.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. As I said, I work in Los Angeles, and I was wondering what you thought about governors from different states giving incredible incentives to big, really big companies in other states to draw them there, or slowly lure them away.
That is
and do you think that, I mean, are we all working together in that sense?
Because it kind of feels
to me like outsourcing, and I'm, worried.
That's a very good question, and it's an interesting question, and some legislation came up a couple of years ago to deal with it. I think what the caller is speaking to is the fact that you have some states who are providing corporations with huge incentives, with tax breaks, with infrastructure improvement, with maybe paying for some of the workforce in order to steal them away from another state. So you're seeing one state in this country working against another state, and that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I think there was some effort some years ago on the part of the federal government to try to deal with that and say, look, instead of trying to steal companies away from another state, there are other ways to try to create economic development. Let's approach it that way.
Ed in San Juan Capistrano, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom and Bernie. Senator Sanders, I'm sorry. I was wondering if yesterday on Air America reported that Dick Cheney on Sunday in Camp Lejeune gave a talk and told the troops that he was looking into having the 22nd Amendment.
Ed, let me stop you right there. That was an April Fool's joke. Look at the date. Look at the byline. The date on that thing. I got dozens of copies of the thing. It's an April Fool's joke.
Cheney. See, the problem with the Bush administration is every day seems like April Fool's, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean that's the thing is that that we would all take it seriously, because the first time I read it I thought, oh my God, and isn't it a shame that we have an administration where you could think, oh
that's
my
right.
God.
That's
Dennis
right.
In Alexandria, Virginia, you're live with Bernie Sanders. We have about a minute here before we have to take a break.
Thanks for taking my question. I was wondering, since this is a time of belt tightening and being we're in the current war situation, and everybody has to cut back a little bit, why are oil companies permitted record profits quarter after quarter after quarter, and that isn't considered
good? Well, Ed, I think we're going to raise just that issue at an energy, if I have anything to say about it, during an energy committee hearing. Prices of gas are soaring. ExxonMobil, year after year recently, has had record-breaking profits. They managed to give their former CEO almost $400 million in a retirement benefit. I think it is high time that we took a look at what goes on with the oil companies.
Yeah, it sure seems that, I don't think that the price of oil internationally is all that well manipulated. The price of gasoline here domestically certainly seems to be under somebody's thumb.
I think so.
Yeah. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the brunch, our Brunch with Bernie segment, our hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us taking your calls, and we'll continue right after this break. We'll be right back.
Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour, the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. Our Brunch with Bernie Hour, Senator Bernie Sanders on the line taking your calls. And Joe in Murrysville, Pennsylvania, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Well, thank you, Tom. Senator Sanders, I have a question for you. The Democrats and Republicans are very good with this tax ball, passing it back and forth, blaming the other party for the way taxes are so screwed up. My question is, why don't you people in the Senate and Congress tighten the belt, act like the money is your money, that there's an end to it, and start, you know, a little bit of fiscal conservatism, shall we say, instead of acting like a bunch of drunken sailors on a weekend binge?
Okay, Joe, I mean, that's a fair question. To my mind, the particular outrage of our current tax system, and this is my view, is that over the last 6 years, President Bush has provided hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest 1% of our population, the people who need it the least. And by not adequately funding education and other services, all over America we've seen local taxes, including the property tax, go up. So taxes for billionaires go down, taxes for the middle class in many instances go up. I think that if we move aggressively in that area, we'll be taking a major step forward in making our tax system a lot fairer and protecting the interests of middle-income people. To be very honest with you, not every Democrat agrees with me. I think many of them do. Most do, but not all. Virtually no Republican agrees with me on that issue. And I think in terms of taxes, that is the area that we've got to focus on.
Bernie, I forgot to bring back that question from the bottom of the hour. The fellow called and he pointed out that many people are dying from asbestos-related related cancer, like my father died from mesothelioma, and that a lot of the companies that have been doing this to people are declaring bankruptcy to get out of it. And he was right. He was wondering, you know, what you thought about the legality and morality of that and what should be
done. Needless to say, I think that is horrendous. These companies have caused terrible damage to so many families, people who have suffered and died. The bill that's now coming before the Congress, which is being pushed by some of these companies, would establish a fund with limited amounts of money, out of which payments would be made to victims of asbestos poisoning. And I'm opposed to that. I think people deserve justice and redress, and they deserve to be able to go into the courts to get what they're entitled to. And that's kind of where that debate is right now in the Senate and the House.
I agree with you. This bill is basically a bailout of these big companies.
Right.
And on our nickel.
Yeah.
On our nickel. Plus it caps the damages that the victims can get. Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Senator, they just backdoored Andrew Biggs onto the Social Security Board as deputy director. This is the man that was leading the fight to privatize Social Security. Is there something the Senate can do to get this man ousted? And one other question, sir, and you can answer. Is there a terrorist organization called MEC that we have to protect in Iraq?
Called what? Terrorist organization?
MEC is the it's an Iranian terrorist organization that the Bush administration has been funded to do terrorist acts inside Iran, actually. But that's another thing.
In terms of the first part of the question, what Bush did really rather outrageously is take advantage of the fact that the Senate was not in session to push through these appointments. He also pushed through for the ambassadorship to Belgium a gentleman named Mr. Fox, and a couple of weeks ago he said he was withdrawing that nomination. And then you have a president who tells us he wants to go forward in a bipartisan manner. I think his behavior is outrageous. I'm not quite sure what the Senate can do once those appointments are made.
Ann in Garden Grove, California, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Tom, Senator. I'm quite ignorant, actually, on this topic, so I'm hoping you can help me. But I understand that some part of the oil itself is traded on the stock exchange, which I find absurd. I don't know if it's the oil or if it's energy futures, but can we stop it? And what is it?
Well, of course, the oil companies are on the stock markets big time. That question touches on our dependency on oil, the high price of oil, where do we go from here? In my view, the immediate task that we face for motorists in rural states like mine and all over America is to start putting pressure on ExxonMobil and the other large oil companies to stop ripping off the American people and force them to lower their prices. Long term, of course, if we're going to save this planet, we've got to break our dependency on fossil fuel, move to energy efficiency, move to sustainable energy. And right now, there is a major energy bill that is being marked up in the Senate. I'm on that committee, which I hope will take us a giant step forward in breaking our dependence on not only oil, but coal, demand a huge increase in CAFE standards so that the cars we're driving will get good mileage per gallon. And that's just a very big challenge that we as a nation face.
Lou in Fayetteville, Arkansas, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator. I was curious. I know Senator Dodd is holding hearings on the credit card companies, but do you think there's any possibility that the Senate or the Congress can really do anything about the usurious practices of these credit card companies? And as a second question, is there any possibility that the Senate or the Congress will go back and reexamine that faulty bankruptcy act that they put through a couple years ago?
Very good question. I used to be in the House on the Financial Services Committee, which dealt with credit cards, was very active in that issue, and you're absolutely right. What these credit card companies are doing is running a switch-and-bait operation. They're sending out brochures to people, by the billions, by the way, billions of these brochures, prospectives, that say zero interest, 2% interest. But, of course, the bottom line, if you read very closely, is they can raise their rates at any time, and they will raise their rates. They are charging interest rates in some cases up to 29%. They have all kinds of fees and late charges and everything else. So I think that there is a chance. The Republicans, of course, would not do it. I would hope very much that we can move aggressively against these companies that are ripping off the American people big time. And I do agree we should take another look at that bankruptcy bill. I voted against it. It's going to hurt a lot of working people.
Yeah, or already is. Yeah. Well said. Senator Bernie Sanders, Senator, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom. Take care.
It's always great talking with you, Bernie. 57 minutes past the hour. Mark Morano up next.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
Tom Hartman is excellent. He's bright. He's personable.
Tom Hartman on Air America Radio. Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
Welcome to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, a heads up, if you're curious about the book that Lamar Waldron and I wrote, Ultimate Sacrifice. There is an hour-long show that NBC put together based on that book, exclusively based on that book. It's going to be on TV tonight on the Discovery Times channel, which is running at 7 o'clock Eastern and again at 2 a.m. Eastern time. That would be, 4 p.m. Pacific and 11 p.m. Pacific. That's on the Discovery channel. The title of the program is Conspiracy Files JFK Assassination. So, and you can find more information, including some new stuff that we've been able to dig out of CIA files over at UltimateSacrificeTheBook.com. So, just to give you a heads up on that. Global warming, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has come out with the second part of their report, talking about the absolute screaming disasters that are going to happen and that actually not even are going to, are, as we speak, happening in third world countries around the world. And the challenges that we'll be facing in first world countries, both as a consequence of global climate change itself and as a consequence of the disasters in the third world. One of the ways that many people have responded to this buildup of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, is to try to maintain their lifestyle and yet balance it out by buying carbon credits. Al Gore, for example, rather famous for this, probably the most high-profile person doing it, to basically offset his lifestyle. Mark Morano is with us. His website, epw.senate.gov. He's the communications director for the Senate Environmental and Public Works Committee on Senator James Inhofe's staff, the notorious or famous, your choice, global warming denier. And Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tom. It's important that your listeners hear the other side. In fact, the rank-and-file scientists are rebelling against what the UN is doing. The UN, if you read some closely, some of the Associated Press reports, what they're doing over in Belgium right now with this summary, this is political delegates and bureaucrats, the UN, debating over the finer points of language in this report, similar to the way the Democratic Republican Party argues over a platform plank at a party. These are not scientists sitting there decreeing anything. This is all politics. No one should confuse this with a scientific process. This
Mark,
is
I've
the height of silliness.
Papers. I have submitted papers to peer-reviewed publications. I've you know been around those fields for years and years. My son is a scientist. There is no such thing as a scientific paper that doesn't get disputed.
Right. Well,
no such thing.
But this is not the actual summary coming out today. I'm not talking about the actual UN report that involves all the scientists. The actual summary is written by the political delegates and bureaucrats. It's a very political process, almost exactly akin to arguing over abortion, gun control at a party platform plank.
Well, the bottom line is that if this really is a problem that could lead to the end of life as we know it, it's going to have to be resolved by a political process, and so it's entirely appropriate that it's
right, but they're
by
dealing with science,
process.
And that's the problem. They've politicized the science. If you look at like the national,
we have to politicize the science,
well,
Marker. It's not good. Nothing's going to be get
no,
done about it.
If you look at like the National Academy of Sciences, a governing board, the American Meteorological Society, yeah, they come out with these sort of ambiguous statements that say man is responsible and we should be concerned. But the rank and file scientists of these very same organizations are now openly rebelling. The American Meteorological Society has a real problem on their hands. The broadcast meteorologist estimates up to 95% are opposing global warming alarmism. National Academy of Science members, Richard Lindzen, Claude Allègre, these are people that are coming out and saying they've had enough, and these little scientific boards of these prestigious institutions that come out and make these statements are not speaking for the rank-and-file scientists. And the UN no more represents all scientists than labor unions represent all American workers. They don't. They only
I should say, I got nothing to worry about because the weathermen on TV across America are telling me that I got nothing to worry about.
Oh, these are certified.
A meteorologist is not a climatologist. There's a world of difference, Mark, and you know that.
It depends on what kind of science they're doing and what kind of studies. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you
meteorologists are not scientists. They're essentially the equivalent of somebody who has a 2-year college degree.
Richard Lindzen from MIT is an atmospheric meteorologist. It depends on what branch you're studying and how you're studying it. But the other thing,
let's get to the carbon offsets.
Does it mean you're not? What about geologists? What about solar specialists? That's the other thing. You can't just look at one angle here. People are discounting the sun. The bottom line is the alarmism created by the media, which is getting this from the UN. And Al Gore is actually backfiring. And if you go back to January, the scientists that have come out of the woodwork now to reject this climate alarmism, it's really actually quite spectacular. And then when you look at the proposals on Capitol Hill, which the sponsors admit, even the Washington Post has admitted, would not have any impact on the climate if they're right on the science. If Gore's right on the science, it would not even impact it because they're all symbolic. But they're going to have huge impacts on people's wallet. Your listeners need to know that anything that comes out of Capitol Hill will be pure symbolism, climate-wise, but have a real economic price tag. Look at what Schwarzenegger's done in California. It's all these cuts that are 15, 20 years, decades into the future. Nothing now. They live their lifestyle, which goes back to your question.
Yeah, Schwarzenegger in California is jump-starting an entire industry, which I think is a marvelous thing. And it probably will make California in the forefront of this stuff. And it's going to create all... I mean, this has the opportunity to be the next dot-com boom. The solar power
industry. Well, I agree with you. There's a lot of money to be made. And first of all, no one's opposed to technology. Senator Inhofe supports the Asia-Pacific Partnership, which brings in India, China, with new technologies, which is the real solution. The real problem is that cap-and-trade, Kyoto-style legislation is a utter disaster. Europe's not following it. Canada can't meet it. Canada said they had to have a collapse similar to the Soviet Union.
You know, Mark, I agree with you.
Problem.
It's nowhere near enough. It's
well, it's not about not
enough.
Being enough. It's a completely wrong approach.
You think it's way too much. I think it's way too enough. But let's talk. We only have 3 minutes left. Let's talk about carbon. Sure. You may be surprised, but I'm probably going to not be all that different from your position, although I'm going to do a therefore and that I doubt you would go to. But, you know, take a shot at this.
Well, here's the thing. A carbon offset, obviously, there's a lot of problems. There's actually an article in March 11th in the Sunday Times of the UK saying that it could take up to 100 years to have any impact. Jake Gyllenhaal, the Hollywood actor, paid $10,000.
This is for trees to grow
to take the carbon out of the atmosphere. Schwarzenegger's been criticized. Jake Gyllenhaal spent $10,000 in Africa to plant trees. Uganda started a tree planting program. Think of Africa, malaria, dysentery, infant mortality, you know, basic necessities they're lacking. And Jake Gyllenhaal has $10,000 to give, and he's giving it to plant trees. It just seems
but
like
what
a
those, let me just add, though, what those trees will do, what those trees will do is they will increase the evaporation of moisture into the atmosphere and stop downwind desertification, which is one of the big problems that Africa is facing, that because they've cut down all the trees, they also are seeing their deserts grow, and so planting trees actually will be good for agriculture.
Well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with planting trees, don't get me wrong. It's just about priorities, though. And this
But let's talk about
sure.
the carbon offsets.
Sure.
I look at carbon offsets in two ways. Number one, I look at it as frankly, an excuse to maintain a lifestyle that people shouldn't be maintaining.
Yes.
And that, I think, is your point.
And there's nothing wrong with a carbon offset in the sense that, you know, as long as it's not mandated by the government. There's actually a bill in Congress that wants taxpayer funding of carbon offsets now. Congressman, I believe, from Vermont, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I think that's a great idea, and that's my therefore. Now, but let me draw an analogy. I would suggest to you that carbon offsets right now are sort of like walking by the Salvation Army at Christmas time and putting $100 in the pot or $5.
It's a way to assuage guilt, yes.
That's right. And it's a way to have a small impact on a large problem.
And it is.
You know, poverty in the United States, hunger in the United States, you can have a small impact by putting $50 in the Salvation Army pot as you're walking by, as you're walking into your Walmart or whatever on Christmas. Now, I would say that as a society, we have looked at the problem of poverty and hunger in the United States, and we've said, this is a big problem. And yes, there's going to be some people working around the edges on this thing like the Salvation Army, but we're also, as a society, going to do something about it. And that's where I think that rather than promoting carbon offsets as something that wealthy people can do, gee, isn't that nice, and now they don't feel so guilty, although I don't oppose that, just like I don't oppose giving money to the Salvation Army, I think that we should make it national policy.
Well, that's where there's obviously nothing wrong with the voluntary people making money, people voluntarily buying it. When you get into national policy, that just becomes a giant climate nanny state based on very questionable science. One of the things Al Gore's criticized for hypocrisy, he was heckled at a Canadian university recently, and he didn't know if the protesters were left-wing or right-wing because they were going after him for his hypocrisy. And this is a problem Gore faces. He's got followers in New York City. The New York Times profiled him. They're people who are foregoing toilet paper, taxi cabs, eating at restaurants, all because they think we're facing a climate emergency.
Wow, those guys
himself,
are writing a book and making a movie. Come on. And this isn't about Al Gore. This is about the
example.
Real... Yeah, come on. Let's not make it the politics of personal destruction, Mark. This is about a real issue, not a guy.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. But it's a good illustration. I'll accept that. I mean, but he's a very good illustration of what's wrong. It's people who don't want to otherwise make any changes just think they can buy these carbon offsets. And again, Hollywood actor Jake Gyllenhaal as a classic example.
But it's a start. It's a start. It sensitizes people to the issue.
There's nothing wrong with that, but when you talk about your proposal of getting people, the government to mandate it, that's where it gets very frightening, and that's where you need to reconsider. Your listeners need to go to epw.senate.gov, get the truth about global warming.
Okay, Mark Morano, James Inhofe, director of the Senate Environmental and Public Works Committee staffer. Thanks.
Thanks
Mark,
a lot, David. Enjoyed it.
16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Tom Hartman on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Minutes past the hour. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Progressive Talk Radio, Air America Radio, Tom Hartman Program. Global warming is this, as Tony Blair says, our quote for the day from the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Tony Blair, global warming is too serious for the world any longer to ignore its danger or split into opposing factions on it. Now, here's what carbon offsets are. Just, you know, I should have mentioned this before Mark and I started debating them. But nonetheless, here we are. Carbon offsets are where, and there's all these websites where you can, like, go on and there's carbon calculators and things, are where you determine how much carbon you are producing, how much carbon you're emitting into the atmosphere as a consequence of your life on Earth. One of the calculators that I saw online, you type in how many miles do you drive every year in your car? What gas mileage does your car get? What's your annual oil or gas bill? What's your annual electric bill? And you can pretty much calculate, you know, how many how many pounds of carbon dioxide are coming out of the oil or gas based on the cost of it, and you can calculate how much is emitted, you know, based on the electricity that you use, and how many miles do you fly every year. And you put all that stuff together, and basically, you know, it's your carbon footprint. And so you know that you're producing X. You're producing, you know, 5,000 tons of, or 500 tons or 5 tons or whatever it may be. I, you know, don't remember the exact numbers, frankly, of carbon dioxide, in typically, some of it's methane, but of carbon products into the atmosphere every year. And then you go out into the marketplace and you buy things that will offset that carbon. For example, you buy a piece of a rainforest in Brazil that is absorbing carbon out of the atmosphere, or you plant trees in Africa, as Mark mentioned, or you buy part of a windmill farm, or, you know, you help fund part of a windmill farm, which will allow an oil-fired power plant to be retired that is going to generate, you know, the amount of carbon equal to what you're using. And these are called carbon offsets. And frankly, it's not all that expensive. I calculated for my lifestyle. Now, I drive a Prius, and I don't drive that much, so I get fairly good gas mileage, and I only fill up my tank maybe once every 3 weeks or so. But I do fly a fair amount. I fly about 100,000 miles a year. And we plugged that in, and we plugged in the cost of the electricity in our house and our gas. We've a relatively small house, but, you know, whatever. You add it all up. And I think for Louise and I, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $500 a year to offset our cost of living on the planet. Now, some people, you know, Mark was mentioning some rock star, the guy's putting $10,000 to offset his carbon. He must have a little more lavish lifestyle than I do, let's say. I was surprised by how much flying doesn't add to it, because it's actually a more efficient way of moving around than driving, for example. But in any case, And then you go to an organization, the National Carbon Offset Coalition, NCOC, 7 Montana nonprofit corporations. This is one of them, carbonplanet.com. Another, Climate Care is another, CO2balance.com, CODigit2balance.com. They have carbon offset calculators. Conservation International, MyClimate_UK, that's in the United Kingdom. The Solar Electric Light Fund, TerraPass, Carbon Neutral Company. There's a bunch of them. There are some for-profit companies doing this. A lot. Most of them are non-profit companies. And no doubt there are some scam artists and BS artists out there doing it as well. But by and large, it's a solid, legitimate thing. Stuart Pym, for example, a friend of mine, people are investing in some land that he's buying down in Brazil to protect rainforest and grow rainforest. And not only does it prevent the rainforest from getting cut down, but it increases. Now you say, well, wait a minute. If it's going to take a while for those trees to take carbon out of the atmosphere because they grow slowly, number one. And number two, eventually that carbon's going to be re-released into the atmosphere because the trees are going to die and decay. Yes, that's all true. But what it's doing is it's buying us time. If the reality is that the amount of carbon in the atmosphere right now, which is about pushing 200 parts per million higher than it was just 50 years ago, if the amount of carbon that's in the atmosphere right now is a 50-year problem, even if we stop producing all carbon right now, we need a transition period here. And if we can offset our carbon emissions, and ideally if we can do it as a nation, then we can at least slow down the rate at which we're adding carbon to the atmosphere. Now, I think if we were to do it as a nation, that it would make the cost of our carbon more real. Because what's happening right now is we're externalizing those costs. It's my point that a gallon of gasoline actually costs $10. There's the $3 for the gallon of gasoline that you pay at the pump. There's the $4 that you're paying in taxes to the military-industrial complex, to the Defense Department, to protect the shipping lanes and protect our interests in oil-rich countries around the world. There's the $2 that represents the number of the cost of dealing with the cancers that will be contracted in the United States as a consequence of exposure to the burning of fossil fuels. And then there's another dollar of costs that are associated with carbon, you know, just with the global warming and things like, you know, Hurricane Katrina and whatnot, all the disasters associated with global warming. And that number, by the way, is going to be going up dramatically. And so if we were to take those costs that are right now being externalized, that is to say we the people are paying for them rather than the oil companies, rather than people driving their cars, rather than consumers, if we were to take those costs and figure out some way to capture them and say, okay, these are the real costs, everybody look at this, we're all paying part of this anyway, let's start paying it knowledgeably and explicitly rather than with higher health care bills and rather than with a higher Defense Department budget, I think it would be a good thing. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
It's your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman with you, 34 minutes past the hour. The second hour of our program, Jeff in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You are live and on the air. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Tom. I hear you talking about the global warming, but I don't hear you mentioning an increase in solar activity. From what I understand from a lot of scientists I hear speaking on television, that the Martian poles are melting, and that every planet they can detect clear out to Pluto is warmer than it used to be. And
that's true.
And that can only indicate an increase in solar activity. Now, I'm not saying this means that we should just do nothing here on planet Earth because it's futile. But I don't think we should just emphasize greenhouse gases exclusively as the source of the global warming.
I think you missed our show with Ross Gelbspan. If you look back 300 years ago, virtually 100% of the climate variability of the planet Earth, going all the way back for hundreds of millions of years, billions of years arguably, was the result of solar variability. There's the 11-year sunspot cycle. There's an 11,000-year cycle. There's a 27,000-year cycle that has to do with, literally our moving from one zodiacal sign into another. I mean, is the just relative to the sun and real? I mean, there's all these cycles, right? And they layer on top of each other. And you add that to things like tectonic activity and the Earth occasionally being hit by an asteroid or a meteorite, you've got all these variations. So 100%, all these exogenous sources were 100% of climate variability up to 300 years ago. As recently as 1900, they were 85% of all climate change. Only 15% of changes in the climate in 1900 could be attributable to carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as a result of human activity. Now they account for about 15% of climate variability, and 85% of climate variability is a consequence of changes in the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere primarily, and also methane and other carbon sources, and those then, increasing the warming, that increasing water vapor, and on it goes. So, yes, solar energy, and we are in a sunspot cycle, it is warming up, and that's one of the big dangers, is that solar cycle that we're in right now is going to add to the 85% impact of the carbon in the atmosphere and really whack us upside the head and throw us into a situation where if ice, for example, up at the North Pole, which reflects light and heat, is replaced by open water, which is dark and absorbs light and heat, that we're going to get into a positive feedback loop rather than a negative feedback loop where more heat causes the planet to create environments that actually catch more heat, and then it's like having your thermostat set so that whenever it says okay, you want to set it for 85, when it hits 85, instead of turning the furnace off, it turns the furnace on. A positive feedback loop is not what you want. It'll put you into a death spiral, and that's what everybody's really, really worried about. Read the IPCC study. It's all in there. Paul in Augusta, but thanks for the call and for giving me a chance to riff on that. Paul in Augusta, Georgia. Hey, Paul.
Look, I don't think the guy you were talking to understands the feed, the talking points that are put out by the conservatives and the think tanks that we got in this country putting out garbage.
He's one of the main guys doing it, so I think he does understand it.
Oh, he is one of the main guys doing it. I've just never heard him before. But yeah. I can tell you, as far as I'm concerned, being able to say pseudo-intellectual liberalism and megadiddles doesn't make you a conservative.
Okay, I'll go along with that.
It could mean you're a disciple of the old Oxycontin addict. who got his third wife off the internet and disposed of her and was caught coming back in this country from a high prostitution, child prostitution country with somebody else's Viagra bottle.
Yeah, Paul, I'm not, you know, I'm just not going to go there. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to go there. The politics of personal destruction doesn't interest me. Chris in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
How's it going?
Just quick, but I'll get better. What's up?
Okay, you know, I just want to reiterate what you were saying. The dialogue against Al Gore and the dialogue against global warming seems to appeal to the everyday American's ego, the everyday American's wallet, rather than the everyday American's heart and mind and consciousness. What you just said previously in regards to the amount of money we spend on gasoline is on par. I've been a regular call to this station for the past 20 years, and the attacks that I see against Al Gore are reprehensible, particularly coming from the liberal community, from the, if you will, the conspiratorial community. It doesn't make any sense. You know, people shouldn't just go for the common dollar, selling their souls for a few shekels, as they say. This is our planet, and we've got to protect it.
Well said, Chris. Thank you very much. Well said. Jonathan in Portland, Maine. Hey, Jonathan, you're up.
Thank you, Tom, for taking my call. I had a question before my comment, and you could either answer it now, if you could, please, or after I hang up. But the details, I missed the details on when that show is going to be on Discovery Channel on the JFK.
Oh, yeah. It's Eastern Time, 7 o'clock tonight, and 2 a.m. this tonight, tomorrow morning, on the Discovery Channel. It's called JFK Conspiracy Files.
Thank you. Look forward to it, sir. And my only comment was that it's that type of short-sightedness that your guy, Mark, I can't remember his last
Mark
name.
Mark Morano, yeah.
Yeah, the short-sightedness to say that, I know he kind of disclaimed it by saying that, I know trees are good, but you got to have priorities. If the fact that he doesn't understand why putting trees in the ground now that's going to have benefits 100 years from now after we're all dead, why that's important and how that's, how, you know, sorry, I'm losing it, but the
No, I agree with your point. We need to take the long view as well as the short view, and the short view is, hey, what about my wallet? The long view is, hey, what about the planet? And I think that we can do both. Is that your point, Jonathan?
Absolutely. And the anti-global warming people with their, oh, it's all about solar cycles, which are millions of years long. Well, if you can understand that things last hundreds of thousands of years, why can't you understand why you need to plant trees in Africa right now?
Yeah, well said. Jonathan, thank you very much for the call. Ken in Cupertino, California. Hey, Ken.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to comment on one thing that man said near the end of his, Mark said at the end of his session, and that was that it's okay, everything was okay as long as the government doesn't regulate it, as long as the government doesn't set the standards.
Right. And this is the religion of the right, the religion of the so-called conservatives and the libertarians, who I refer to as Republicans who want to smoke dope and get laid, and the objectivists, that government is a bad thing.
It drives me absolutely crazy because everything, these people owe their entire lives to the safety standards that were set by our government.
Right, and they owe their ability to function in society to the public education that was provided by our government, and they owe their ability to talk to the public rights of way that were provided to the communications companies and phone companies by government, and they owe their ability to talk on the radio to the airwaves that were, you know, designated and regulated by God. You know, it's on and on. You know, this is the Joe Republican rap, right? You know, the water that they're drinking is not filled with toxins and poisons because of the government. But,
it's all of that and more. And I just want to make one other comment on it. If the oil companies, I'm going to assume that most people who believe that global warming isn't an issue have some sort of vested interest in keeping things the way they are. And I'll further assume that they own stock or something in the oil companies, or they work for the oil companies, because they're the biggest beneficiaries of keeping the status quo. So why can't the oil companies, who are just making record earnings beyond imagination and comprehension, why can't they take some of that money and just build these wonderful solar panels or renewable energy type of systems that will replenish and replace their own product? They have the money and the wherewithal to do it.
Here's the problem, Ken. And actually, you know, BP is actually moving in that direction. They're the world's largest supplier of solar panels right now, or at least they were last year. But the big problem is centralization. What the oil companies want is an energy system or energy source that can be centralized and distributed out from a central point. So they're interested in building big solar farms or big wind farms, things like that, so that they can control the supply. What they don't want is for example, your neighborhood, your city block, or my community. I live in a floating home community. We've got 34 houseboats on the river here. What they don't want is, and we've actually been talking about it, they don't want us to get together and say, let's put solar panels on all our roofs, and let's put windmills up on top of the poles on our dock that floats up and down with the river, and let's generate our own electricity. Because then they can't control it. Then they're just in the business of selling a product, solar panels. They don't want to be in that business. They want to be in the business of having you by the neck with their hand around your throat. And that means that they control all of the energy. And until they figure out how to do that with solar and wind power, they're going to be opposing it. And in the meantime, they've got this huge investment in oil infrastructure, and they're moving along on that. So that's the bottom line, Ken. Thanks for the call, though. Haskell in Los Angeles. Hey, Haskell, just a minute before a break here. What's up?
Hello. Good morning, Tom. Hello.
Yes sir.
Hello, Tom. You know, the gentleman, a few calls before that, he was hot under the collar about the global warming, but he doesn't understand that as one person, Mother Nature, you can't fool her. She will make everybody look foolish when she strikes, and she doesn't care. May I ask where you're calling from?
I'm in Portland, Oregon.
No, where are you calling from?
Where am I calling from?
What state? What state are you calling from?
Oregon.
Oregon?
Yes, sir.
Interesting. But I thought San Francisco, they told me you are in San Francisco.
No, I'm on the air in San Francisco. We're live in San Francisco right now in Los Angeles. But I'm live in Portland, Oregon. Haskell, thanks a lot for the call. At 45 minutes past the hour, we'll be back with Talk Radio News Service, hopefully. In just a moment, stick around, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Viagra for your brain. Oh, we won't be back with Talk Radio. We'll be back with more of your calls. Viagra for your brain. Just don't tell Limbaugh, he'll want some.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio. This is Tom Hartman on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone on the banks of the Willamette River in the People's Republic of Portland, Oregon, Tom Hartman here with you on Monday, 620 KPOJ, the radio station that I'm broadcasting from. I also do a three-hour morning show before I do this national show, and we're adding another person to the morning show. Carl Wolfson's coming on, which is going to allow us to take this national show and start running it live on KPOJ, so that's going to be a hoot. And KPOJ is going to become our flagship station. So in response to our last caller who's like, where are you? I'm here in Portland, Oregon, having a fine old time. Jeff in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hey, I just thought you might want to know. I've been looking into solar panels on a house that I'm going to try and build, and I found out that with tax incentives, rebate from the utilities, and if you finance it through a construction loan or a home improvement loan, so that you can write off the interest on your taxes, the system pays for itself in 3 years.
3 years?
3 years. I mean,
that's incredible. The last I heard, which was a year or so ago, there, it was like a 10-year amortization. And it used to be 20 years back in the Carter days.
Well, that depends on how you do it. It depends on the state, but and also the utility. But the big thing is it really depends on the amount of solar panels that you put on and what you're trying to do. If you're just running it during the daylight hours, using the solar panel power during the daylight hours, and you don't have any batteries.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's and also, you know, you're living in Phoenix, I'm living in Portland. It's kind of gray and cloudy, although a lot of sun gets through the clouds. I was amazed to discover that it almost, you know, being cloudy isn't that big a deal.
Actually, here in Arizona, we lose about 15% of the efficiency because of the heat.
Oh, interesting. When you look out at the desert and you see the wavy lines in the air, that heat is actually distorting the transmission of light through the air.
I think it has something to do with the chemical reaction inside the panel.
Oh, it reduces the efficiency of the solar panels.
Right.
Ah, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Jeff, thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Tom in Aurora, Colorado. Listening to 760 AM. Hey, Tom.
Thank you for being a beacon to us and
pardon me.
For doing everything. It's a great show.
Thank you.
The one fellow that you talked a couple of calls ago about the heat from the planets, are they affecting the planets? And also your caller, the fellow about the global warming. I've read an article here. It came out of the New Yorker magazine. It's called The Darkening Sea. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
It's what carbon emissions are doing to the ocean.
I am familiar with that topic, yes.
Yeah, it's an article from the November 20th New Yorker. It's by Elizabeth Colbert. And they talk about the acidification of the ocean. And
this is the area that my son works in. He's getting his master's degree down at the University of Georgia. And you've got a bunch of scientists who are flipped out about this, that the oceans are warming up, they're absorbing carbon, that carbon dioxide acidifies the ocean. It's changing the chemistry of the ocean, which is changing the fauna and flora of the ocean and changing...
From being alkaline to acidification.
Right.
Yeah, and you might want to consider looking at that article. The other thing was in Mother Jones magazine about 9 months ago, an article about a scientist on a research ship about the conveyor belt effect in the ocean, what it's doing it to. In this article, I don't mean that one, but on this article here, The Darkening Sea, the scientist talks about the shells of the breaking down because of this, and it's affecting the food chain in the ocean.
Yeah, it is. And in fact, I wrote about that back 10 years ago in my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And I think it was probably one of the first to be talking about the Great Conveyor Belt and the possible crash of it. And it's only really in the last 5 years or so that anybody's really taking it seriously.
But
and now, the more
part,
they look at it, the more alarmed they are about
but
it.
But that part of it, they're leaving out about how it's affecting the oceans. They're concentrating just on the outer. And this is part of the puzzle.
You're right. Most of the focus is on what will happen when it throws Europe into an ice age, when the Great Conveyor Belt stops. But you're right. It is dramatically affecting ocean life and sea life as well. Devron in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Devron.
Hey, Tom. How you doing? Yeah, about your last talking head, I know you're going to get better, too.
Thank you. I already said that, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, that talking head that you had on, I mean, it just... At the end there, when he called you Dave, I believe, I was like, I know.
That's because David Poole is my producer, and he's sitting right next to me, and David's the guy who books Mark, and so he thought he was
talking to both of you at this. Okay, I was like,
he
doesn't know who
he wasn't.
To?
He wasn't trying to insult me, and Mark is not a flake. He just mixed up his names.
But David it just Poole seems like they really drive home their talking points, which anybody should do, but. Where they just don't even want to hear what the opposition is saying. It's not
they just don't pay attention to it. But it wasn't he wasn't trying to diss me. He just screwed up.
Hello?
Dan in San Diego. Hey Dan, we got 1 minute before we got to wrap up this hour. What's up?
About the guess about the trees being planted, and the purpose of the trees isn't just to reduce global warming. I mean, it holds down the soil, prevents soil erosion. It produces crop, like nuts or fruits or whatever, provides habitat for animals. And then more on how he was saying we should give them the $10,000, spend it on something else. I think it speaks to part of greed and part ego. And the ego part is we don't, instead of teaching a man how to fish, we kind of say like, hey, look, we gave you a fish, pat ourselves on the back. And as far as greed, we tend to end up with solutions that make big companies richer. We'll go out and build a dam, say, instead of giving people hand crank flashlights or hand crank radios or something like that. So and that's my point.
Okay, point well made, Dan. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening to us there on KLSD in San Diego. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's try an Everything Goes Friday in our next hour. Let's just play with this a little bit. I'll tell you about it in just a moment. Stick around.
Tom Hartman is excellent. He's bright. He's personable.
Tom Hartman on Air America Radio. Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Viagra for your brain.
Let me tell you about our Everything Goes Friday in just a minute. First, just a couple of small things here that I think are fascinating. First, Todd Tulsis, who's the production guy here and All Things Extraordinary at Clear Channel in Portland, Oregon, gave me the Pfizer Notice of Annual Meeting of Shareholders. And this is what, you know, goes out to the stockholders of Pfizer's stock. And somehow somebody, you know, enough people hit enough of a critical threshold to get on the annual ballot. And if you're a holder of Pfizer's stock, you can vote this to get on the annual ballot. Here it is. I'm reading it literally from the Pfizer annual report. In October 2005, Pfizer announced the opening of a new research and development center in Shanghai, China, with Pfizer's chief medical officer stating that Pfizer's planned investment in this R&D center will near $25 million over the next 5 years. The November 13, 2006 issue of Forbes magazine reported on Pfizer's research in China, noting that the rationale for shifting animal testing to China is that, and now they're quoting, this is Forbes quoting Pfizer, quote, scientists are cheap, lab animals plentiful, and pesky protesters are held at bay, end quote. And quoting a pharmaceutical industry executive who, quote, admits that Chinese testing companies lack quality control and high standards in treatment. And so basically what it is, there are these two votes, number 4 and 5, where the shareholders are voting on vivisection, on whether Pfizer is going to continue doing vivisection. I think this is fascinating. And so just a heads up, number one. Number two, time for our conservative alert for the day. Yes, Bill O'Reilly and Geraldo Rivera going at it.
I just want to get this straight. You, Geraldo Rivera, with teenage daughters, right, are telling me that you are okay with somebody sneaking into the country, becoming drunk, get convicted of a DUI and staying here.
My nightmare is my daughters having anything to do with a drunk.
Let me finish my answer. My nightmare is my daughter.
Now here's where Bill Law just goes over the edge.
Daughters having anything to do with a person driving drunk. That's my nightmare. Okay. It could be a Jewish drunk.
This
it could be
guy
a Polish
to be
drunk.
Here.
It could be an Irish drunk.
No.
It could be an Italian drunk.
American
what the
crime.
Hell difference does it,
it
make?
It makes plenty of difference.
It does not.
He doesn't have a right to
he
be
didn't
here.
Commit a felony.
He doesn't have a right to be in his country.
What? But that has nothing to do with the
yes,
fact
it
that
does.
He was a drunk.
He should have been
he
deported.
Was a drunk.
What? He should have been deported. And this mayor and a police chief.
Get a grip! Our conservative alert for the day. Indeed. All right. Finally. As you know, one of my contentions, as our regular listeners know anyway, one of my contentions is that the primary divide between conservatives and liberals is that conservatives believe that the fundamental nature of humans is evil, and liberals believe that the fundamental nature of humans is good. In this, conservatives track back, modern conservatives, track back to the writings of Thomas Hobbes, for example, in the early 1600s, and modern liberals track back to the writings of John Locke in the late 1600s, and Rousseau and whatnot, and Thomas Jefferson in the 1700s, and others, other Renaissance and other Enlightenment thinkers. But what about things like the Hatfield-McCoy feud? Here we have a feud that went on for years and years and years. People shooting at each other, people killing each other. Doesn't that kind of indicate that people are inherently evil? This is fascinating. From the Associated Press, finally, an explanation. The most infamous feud, this is Marilyn Marchione writing for the Associated Press, the most infamous feud in American folklore, the long-running battle between the Hatfields and the McCoys, may be partly explained by a rare inherited disease that can lead to hair trigger rage and violent outbursts. See, again, it's not the norm. Dozens of McCoy descendants apparently have the disease, which causes high blood pressure, racing heart, severe headaches, and too much adrenaline or other fight-or-flight stress hormones. Dr. Revy Matthew, a Vanderbilt University endocrinologist treating one of the family members, says this condition can certainly make anybody short-tempered, and if they're prone because of their personality, can add fuel to the fire. Isn't this interesting? That it's an adrenal, you know, a hereditary adrenal dysfunction. You wonder, you know, in fact, this young woman who had a tumor removed from her adrenal gland, this genetic predisposition to this adrenal tumor, she was originally diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactive disorder. They took her to Vanderbilt Children's Hospital. The teachers thought she had ADHD. They found the tumor. They took it out. And now she's fine. She says they called it madness disease. Our family would just go off, even on the doctors. So much for the Hatfields and the McCoys. Now we know. Now we know. By the way, in the context of that debate that you just heard between Geraldo and O'Reilly, this from the Think Progress blog. In his debate with Geraldo last night, Bill O'Reilly argued that the deaths of two girls in a drunk driving incident should be blamed on illegal immigration. I understand it. There's no logic to this, but, you know, he says because the drunk driver was undocumented. That's like, by the way, I would add, that's like saying, you know, if somebody's killed by a female drunk driver, we should blame it on women drivers, or a male drunk driver, male drivers, or somebody between the ages of 31 and 33 that, it's that cohort. You know, I mean, pick your victims, right? During a press conference, the father of one of the girls said, making an issue out of immigration loses the focus that the girls were killed by a man that police said was driving drunk. He said, we need to heal and to bring immigration. And that's disrespectful to a family who's just mourning. In other words, he says O'Reilly's being disrespectful. Meanwhile, the attorney gate is rolling along, the Justice Department facing criticism. Again, this from the Center for American Progress's blog over at thinkprogress.org. The Justice Department faced criticism not only for firing well-respected U.S. attorneys, but for replacing them with loyal Bushies. Here's this 33-year-old woman, Rachel Palouz, or maybe it's Paulos. She has, when she's sworn in, this was a little controversial, they say, a color guard. Now, I remember when the Pope invited me to meet him they called it a private audience. It was more of a photo op, frankly, a brief private conversation, at his summer palace, Castel Gandolfo, up north of Rome. And they invited me to the Vatican, and Louise and I, they gave us a tour of the Vatican, and then we went up there and I met and spoke with the Pope and shook his hand, and picture on my website and all, you know, kind of stuff. He's got a color guard. Right? I mean, you see the Swiss guy, this guy's got a real color guard. But a U.S. attorney? She brings out a color guard and a choir. The Pope's got a choir, by the way, too. A choir, a color guard, professional photographer to be sworn in as a U.S. attorney. So anyhow, this caused people to think this is a little strange. This 33-year-old woman, she is in Minneapolis, by the way. She's the U.S. attorney in Minneapolis. She was special assistant to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. This from the My Fox Twin Cities, the Minneapolis Fox affiliate website. She was a special assistant to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, worked as a senior counsel for Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty, and is best buds with Monica Goodling, the assistant U.S. attorney who recently took the Fifth rather than testify before Congress. Add to the suspicions the fact that Minnesota's former U.S. attorney, Tom Heffelfinger, stepped down just as the White House was developing its hit list. So now here comes the stories that four of this woman's assistants just resigned. Four top staffers to Rachel Paulos. And why? Because they said that she had a highly dictatorial style, that she has earned a reputation for quoting Bible verses and dressing down underlings. That sounds like a Bushy to me. I mean, you know, this is just, you know, it's the whole thing. So, anyhow, there's these things in the news, and as they continue to pass along, I'll share them with you. But broadly, what I'd like to do for the next 45 minutes is hear from you on pretty much anything you want to talk about. We'll, as I said, anything goes Friday. We'll just, you know, you get to set the topic from call to call. Let's try to make them short so we can get a lot of people in. And our number 1-866-33 303-2270. And TomHartmann.com, of course, you can drop into the live chat room. I hang out there during the breaks and occasionally answer folks' questions there, although prefer to do it on the air. But, you know, give us a call. And any topic you want, we'll just do this for the next 45 minutes and see what comes of it. This is the first time that we've tried it. Anything goes Friday. It doesn't mean that you can pester poor Lauren, our call screener, with any old anything you want to say to her. It's anything you want to say to me, right? That's on any topic, right? I mean, things that we don't normally talk about. I mean, things that aren't even political, if you wish. So we'll check it out and see what happens. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann Radio Program, the place where our talking points come from, Jefferson and Madison. Helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartmann here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. While we're slowly solving the world's problems, right? We've got a U.S. senator who's actually doing the people's work. We've had a good discussion about global warming. We figured out that Bill O'Reilly must be somehow related to the Hatfield or the McCoy family. Now let's figure out what's on your mind today. Stephen in Selmers, New York. Hey, Stephen, what's up?
Well, I guess I'll stay on the environmental topic. I thought some of the calls today were really great because they expanded into how, the whole environment is dependent on everything, not just the trees, not just global warming. But it reminds me about an article I read in the Sailing magazine a few days ago about an area in the Pacific Ocean where a bunch of currents come together and it creates a whirlpool where a lot of stuff collects. And the report was that it's about the size of Texas. And you can't even go through that area without seeing a constant stream of garbage. So it basically just points out the respect that, governments and the people who elect their governments have for the planet. It's not a matter of whether or not it's going to kill us, the global warming, but can't we have some respect in general, period?
Yeah, good point and well said, Richard. And not just the governments, also the shipping companies. Dick in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Dick.
Yeah, Tom, I find there are common points of confusion on both the global warming and the Kennedy assassination. It's more of a question of what drives what, not about whether it's happening or was there a conspiracy. And by the way, I'm glad to hear, more balanced and in-depth discussion on global warming, if not the Kennedy.
Thank you. Are you suggesting you think Kennedy was killed by global warming?
No. But we have confusion on the question of what's behind all this stuff. And,
sure.
And the Kennedy assassination. Who was hiring the mob for political agendas and hits. And, the FBI was using the mob, notably the Colombo hitman Greg Scapa from 62.
And vice versa. And vice versa, Dick. The mob was using the FBI as well.
Well, that's the issue here. We've got the CIA had their Pentagon General Ed Lansdale on Daily Plaza, and he was photographed there on November 22nd, which he denied, by the way. And it's a chicken or egg question, and I think the best evidence shows the mob is more CIA and FBI employees, not the reverse, as you seem to want to suggest here.
We'll have to agree to disagree. I'd recommend you check out the Discovery Channel special tonight on it, but it's a topic that... we could spend 4 hours talking about and we just don't have the time. Dave, there's a book out there and there's the movie. It's on the Discovery Channel tonight at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Dave in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Dave.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I guess maybe I'm naive, but I seem to think that in the funding battle between Congress and the President, that the House of Representatives has got the strongest hand in the whole thing, because I think that they should take the conference bill, send it to the President, but get on TV and tell everybody this is the only bill he's going to get.
I agree. And I've been saying that from day one, is if the president vetoes the bill, then you say, thank you very much, Mr. President. You have enough funding to run through the 1st of August, through the end of July, and you better use that money wisely to get our soldiers out of Iraq because you're not getting any more. I absolutely agree with you, Dave. Well said. John in Milford, Massachusetts. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I wanted to talk today about body armor for our troops.
Yes, sir.
There's a real outrage going on as far as the brands of body armor. There's one that's approved by the U.S. Army for our troops. Doesn't appear to be the best brand. There's a competing brand called Dragon Skin that appears a lot better. And, well, the Army just basically.
And they've banned Dragon Skin.
I'm sorry?
They've banned Dragon Skin, haven't they?
They haven't really banned it, but if you're wearing Dragon Skin and you get killed, they won't pay out your life insurance policy.
Yeah. And the reason that they put for that is that they have to have an approved one, otherwise there'll be 20 companies making them, and they're not in the business of certifying everything, and it comes along. And I'd say that the bigger issue here is, you know, why is the Bush administration not making sure that the very best body armor, regardless of brand name, is the only body armor that all of our troops have, period. But well said, John. Thanks for bringing it up. Howard in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Howard.
Hey, Tom. I'm good, and I'm going to get better.
Good.
I beat you to it.
Okay. What's up?
Okay. I am concerned about the British soldiers that were released, and
yeah.
What I would like to speak to is the incompetence of both Blair and Bush, because the buck stops at their desk, to allow that to have even occurred. Why were these 15 soldiers out there at risk, and where were our American ships and British ships?
Well, let's keep in mind, the waters that they were in are still disputed to this day about where the borders are in those waters. And it was a dispute over where the border was in those waters where the British were captured that ignited the original Iraq-Iran war. I mean, it's not like there's not some history here.
I know, but
right?
See, all
and now you've got the British saying that they're demanding an apology because their prisoners had blindfolds put on them and their clothes were taken off.
Yeah, I know, but
and I'm like, wait a minute. What about being hooded? What about being, you know, sensory deprived? What about being locked down, shackled for years at a time? You know, it's just outrageous. And look at what we're doing and what the British have participated in doing to prisoners in the Middle East. And then the British are going, oh, this is inhuman treatment. They put blindfolds on these people. This is inhuman treatment. See how what happens when you change the standards? 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
It's all good. It's all right. But it's always a good day.
Yes, instead of complaining, it's good to acknowledge. 34 minutes past the hour. I just want to call out a special thank you to the affiliates of this station, the radio stations that are carrying our program live to Sirius Satellite Radio and our affiliates in New York and Los Angeles, San Francisco, Detroit, Seattle, Phoenix, San Diego, Denver, Portland, Pittsburgh, Memphis, Tennessee, Portland, Oregon, and Portland, Maine, Fresno, California, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Springfield, Mass., Columbia, South Carolina, Lafayette, Louisiana, Victor Valley, California, Eugene and Springfield, Oregon, Portland, Maine, Anchorage, Alaska, St. Louis, Obispo, Traverse City, Michigan, Santa Barbara, Charlottesville, Virginia, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Marion, Carbondale, Illinois, Ithaca, New York, Sheridan, Wyoming, Eureka, California, Bennington, Vermont, Hibbing, Montana, Somerville, Tennessee, Brattleboro, Vermont, and Brainerd, Minnesota. Thank you. Thank you. And to our affiliates who are carrying us on time delay as well. We particularly appreciate all of our live clears. Eleanor in Woodland Hills, California. Hey, Eleanor. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for your program. Thanks for your work. I'm calling about the middle finger to the Congress recess appointment of of Susan Dudley to the Office of Regulatory Affairs.
Right, the woman who doesn't believe in regulation.
Exactly. Two of the things stated in the L.A. Times, her positions, upset me very much, and I'll say the second one for last. The first is that she thinks that instead of having, I'm a little nervous, first-time caller, instead of having air pollution controls, they should spend the money on a sophisticated pollution warning system so sensitive people can stay inside.
Right.
And the second one was she posed
limits
on arsenic in drinking water because she argued that the calculations of the cost of the EPA benefits overvalued some lives, particularly those of older people with a small life expectancy. You know,
right.
Those
and,
older
and
people
the, and the
are
very young as well.
Those older people are mothers and fathers and grandfathers and mothers.
I
very
know.
Upsetting
it's,
to me.
It's very upsetting to me, too, particularly when we start saying, oh, this life is worth more than that life. And you know,
and this is supposed to be the pro-life party.
Until you start talking about the death penalty or until you start,
right,
start talking about corporate behavior.
Pro-birth, but after that, you're on your own.
They're in favor of forced pregnancy, basically.
Is there anything we can do to get these people out immediately?
Call your senators.
All right.
Call both your senator, your Boxer and Feinstein in California, and for everybody else, you know, wherever you are in the country, call your two senators and just say, I want you to respond, please. And the toll-free number, by the way, for Congress is 1-866-220-0044. Or the direct line is area code 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121. And call your senators and say, do something about this. This is wrong. Len in New York City. Hey, Len.
Hey, how you doing? Two questions that really have to be put to Gonzalez. The first two questions, one is, since Carol Lam was let go, what's been done to trace the reason for a $140,000 boat being bought 2 weeks after Vice President Cheney gave Mitchell Wade that money?
Right.
And the other question is, why is Monica Goodling still working for you if she can't come and testify in front of us without worrying about incriminating herself?
Yep. Excellent, excellent questions, Len, and I totally, totally agree with you. And again, I encourage people to call their member of Congress, the House of Representatives of the Senate, 866-220-0044 or 202-225-3121, and let them know you'd like these questions answered. Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tom. As long as you got people calling Congress, there's something that's I've talked to you before about how letter carriers and all postal workers are kind of in danger of losing their jobs because of privatization.
Yes, and put together a great website for it. Please the URL.
Yeah, it's, we're called Postal Workers United, postalworkersunited.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And there's a House resolution, House 2 in the House right now that needs co-sponsors. And if people will call their member of Congress and just say, you know, sign on to this bill, because what it will do is stop further privatization of the Postal Service.
Right.
And particularly with this threat of them opening our mail, you know that's part of the component of why they want those.
Yeah. And you don't want the guy who was delivering your pizza last week to be delivering your Social Security check this week. Absolutely. Or your credit card bill that he could open up and suddenly have your credit card number. Thank you very much. Jim in Manhattan. Hey, Jim.
Hi, I think I may have that McCoy gene, because when I hear these conservatives, I can only see red.
You and O'Reilly, huh?
Yes, O'Reilly especially. But, you know, I don't want to beat Mark Morano too much, but, I mean, they're using Jake Gyllenhaal as a talking point. I mean,
I know.
How many times? Here's the thing.
Give the guy credit for coming on this program. You wouldn't believe the number of conservatives who are terrified to come on this program.
Okay, I get that, and I do appreciate it, and you have them on, and that's great. But look, he listed a whole list of things that Jake Gyllenhaal should be spending his money on rather than his trees. I mean, maybe he is anyway, but don't.
Probably.
You're too much of a gentleman to ask this, but I think it's relevant. I mean, if they want to say, this is what you should be spending your money on, then shouldn't we know, like, how much Mark Morano and Senator Imhoff are contributing to these causes that they think are so much more important?
Well, what they would say is that they don't think that anybody should be contributing to these things, that it should all be private and that rich people should just keep all their money and they shouldn't be taxed and they have no obligation to society. None of us do. We're all individuals on our own here. There's no such thing as the social contract, et cetera. I mean, you've heard these guys say this on
the air. They're very happy to spend Jake Gyllenhaal's money. I mean, you
know, exactly. And they're very happy to spend your and my money, by the way, by giving it to ExxonMobil in the form of subsidies.
He decided to do this, and they decided that that's not what he should be doing with his money. Well,
yeah,
anyway.
No, good point, Jim, and I think it was a cheap shot on Mark's behalf, but, you know, what the heck. Russell, and thanks for calling. Russell in Denver, Colorado, KKZN. Hey, Russell.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Absolutely love your show. We only got Al Franken before he retired to do his senatorial bid, and I have to say I shed a tear for Al leaving, but if anybody could replace him, it's definitely you.
Well, thank you, Russell. I appreciate that. And we all wish Al the very best. I just heard that he just raised his first $1 million, which is a big deal at a statewide level. So he's doing well. And Norm Coleman is sinking in the polls, and Al is going up, and, you know, God bless him.
Awesome. Hey, the reason I called, you had Senator Bernie Sanders on, and he was talking about alternative energies, and he mentioned that ethanol is controversial because of the cost that it takes to produce the ethanol.
Well, he specified the cost to produce it from corn.
Right. Would you be surprised to find out that the reason why it's controversial is because they're using some of the worst plants to produce ethanol? That corn, switchgrass, and sugarcane aren't even close to the number one ethanol producing plants on the planet?
Right, the number one ethanol-producing plant with the number one cellulose, the most efficient plant that I know of that will convert sunlight into cellulose, into carbon-based matter that can be then converted into ethanol, is hemp.
Yep, absolutely.
They're growing it up in Canada like crazy, huge hemp farms up in Canada for a whole variety of purposes, including biofuels.
Yeah, and it seems to be like the 500-pound gorilla that most people don't either want to talk about or don't know about. I'm actually very happy that you already know about that. I mean, this stuff
we need the federal government to get out of the way, and we need more states to decriminalize or whatever it is. And we're not talking about marijuana here; we're talking about hemp. Although I think marijuana should be decriminalized as well, but we need more states to get out of the way and say, "Hey, you know, hemp is the solution, not the problem." Well said. Thank you for bringing it up, Margaret in Long Island. Hey, Margaret.
Hi. Your discussion with Senator Bernie Sanders about election funding reform, I think an important part of it should be that sitting representatives, senators, House of Reps, whatever, who are running for presidential candidates should have money deducted from their salaries for every day they're on the campaign trail.
That's a good point. Let me argue with myself on that, Margaret, or with you. If part of their job, I mean, if we want to have competent people as president, and part of that competence is the practice of being a legislator, why would we want to punish somebody who's a legislator if they decide to run for president?
I don't want to punish them. I want them to realize that they're leaving an important job, and if they're not participating in what they were elected for, then they're not doing that important job.
Yeah.
And if Senator McCain goes to Iraq with a contingent of 100 bodyguards, why isn't he paying for them?
Oh, well, I agree with that. You know, if a senator is going to use our military, absolutely, if a senator is going to use our military, they should pay 100% of the load if they're going to do it as a campaign stunt, and that's obviously what McCain did. You also have the situation where you've got, you know, people in the House of Representatives, if they're going to run for higher office, like the senator, the presidency, you know, they put their own future at risk because they would also have to run for the House, and you know that's a tough thing, running two campaigns at once. On the other hand, senators, you know, only run every 6 years, and so in the intervening two elections they can run for higher office, which is one of the reasons I think why you see more senators running for president. Joshua and Eugene, hey Joshua, just a half a minute here before we've got to take a break. You had a quick point you wanted to make?
Yeah, I just wanted to point, if we're going to talk about global warming, environmental conservation, we have to talk about animal agriculture. It's a top polluter of our air, top polluter of our waterways, and produces more greenhouse gases than the entire transportation sector combined.
Yeah, okay. Well said, Joshua. I didn't realize it was more than the entire transportation sector, but I know it's huge, and its impact on the water supplies in the United States is massive. And over 100 communities now in Pennsylvania have joined up with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. I mentioned them yesterday, celdef.org, and said no to corporate personhood as a way of stopping giant, mostly hog operations, agricultural operations. So, yeah, vegetarianism can save the world. 45 minutes past the hour.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Thanks so much to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Alex Goldmark, Julian Suckman, Andrew Dunn, Lauren Kirchner at Air America Radio, to Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society and RadioPower.org, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening. Thank you. Welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour, coming up there on Joe in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Joe, you're on the air.
Yeah, I don't know where we're at with these subpoenas for like Carl Rove and Harriet Myers talking to the committee about these attorneys getting fired.
Mm-hmm.
But just the Bush administration offering to have them testify without taking oaths kind of reminds me of Bush and Cheney, the way they handled the 9/11 investigation.
Like, right.
Like, we're just going to walk away and say, oh, never mind, we understand, we won't go any farther.
Yeah, the 9/11 Commission cut them such a huge pass. I mean, they let Bush and Cheney testify, not under oath, in private, together, and one of the stipulations was that whenever Bush was speaking, Cheney could not be required to drink water. But speaking of Dick Cheney, by the way, just a heads up here, yesterday he again said that Al-Qaeda had links to Saddam Hussein in Iraq. At the same time, yesterday, same time, right? And Cheney's saying this on Limbaugh's program. At the same time, the Defense Department released an official report saying that there was no association whatsoever between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. Go figure. Tom in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Tom. Hey, great show. Just so happy when I call and I can't get through. Your listenership is growing in depth and quality. It's just wonderful. What a great program. Tom, I wanted to raise the issue of urban planning. It's a drum that I'm always beating. You know, we're talking about how we're going to not use fossil fuels in one way or another, grow it and get it from the sun. But the truth is, the way that we've designed our society and the way we've let really the oil industry and the auto industry and even the rubber tire industry lead us down the garden path in terms of sprawl and such. We've got to find some way to fund. I don't expect anything to happen for 20 years, but we've got to be thinking 20 years down the road about how we're going to organize our cultures and how we're going to live together in ways that we have a lower carbon footprint.
Yep, spot on, Tom, and well said. And in fact, one of the biggest problems is suburban areas, which were simply designed for cars. They need to be reclaimed. We need to go into our suburban areas and take multiple city, two, three city blocks and say, okay, we're going to turn this into a small town. We're going to do mixed-use facilities. We're going to put the small stores and retail places and office spaces, and we're going to put it all together here and so that people can walk to work. They don't have to drive to work. We need to reclaim our suburban areas and also build a good mass transit infrastructure. Abe in New York City. Hey, Abe.
Yeah, Tom, listen, getting back to Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney is actually the CEO of the American Military Industrial Complex. And what he's done...
That's a good description.
Yeah, he's put together a whole administration that uses everything that's ever happened to this country since they've been in office to make profits for big corporation, energy, pharmaceutical, military contractors, et cetera. And in terms of 9/11, what they did is they knew that something was going to happen, and they wanted something to happen. They purposely put down the guard. They didn't think that it would be quite so bad. They were looking for an excuse to go into Iraq and get the oil.
I'm absolutely inclined to completely go along with your conspiracy theory, Abe. I am very much inclined to absolutely go along with it without any exceptions. Thank you for the call. Ruth in Santa Fe.
Yes, I won't keep you because my gay friend is waiting in the car. He called me last evening and wanted to know if I'd be interested in going to Baghdad sometime today. They're having a large rug sale.
Five rugs for $5.
Yes, and the best part is that we're going to have lunch at this quaint restaurant.
Oh, isn't that marvelous? Okay, great.
Wait, this is going to be a wonderful experience for me.
I am sure it will be, Ruth. Yes, we all saw the footage on TV. Thanks. Your satire is wonderful. Jim in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you, Tom? Great show. I'm glad you're on here because I've been glued to you. I hear every day these tag promos advertising your show where you say that this invasion into Iraq, first time since World War II. And I just want to understand.
Well, it's not. It's the first time a major nation invaded a major nation. I mean, we invaded Grenada illegally. We've invaded so many countries illegally over the last 100 years. I think, you know, it's probably close to 60.
What about Russia into Hungary in 68, Russia into Afghanistan? Russia.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll give. Actually, you know, you could argue that Russia had already claimed all of those territories at Yalta, and so what they were doing, what they claimed they were doing, was actually the equivalent of our putting down an uprising in one of our states.
How about Iraq into Kuwait in 90?
Okay. I'll give you that.
Yeah,
although,
I mean,
you know,
I mean,
if you want to call Kuwait a major industrialized power, I'm not sure that I would describe Kuwait as a major industrialized power. But
well,
you know. Yeah, I think we're splitting hairs here, Jim, but, you know, point taken. Charlie in Brooklyn. Hey, Charlie, just a few seconds before we've got to wrap this show.
Yeah, thanks. In this springtime, such a holy season for so many of our brothers and sisters, sunlight,
yes,
we always say, is the best disinfectant. Senator Carl Levin is trying to get that Pentagon report, which described Iraq and al-Qaeda as having had a mature, symbiotic relationship. He's trying to get that whole report declassified to see if this is the second casus belli that's false. So all
yeah, this is Doug Feith's phony report you're talking about.
Yes, everybody's
yeah,
calling
yeah,
the Senate.
And
let him call him. Carl Levin's declassification measure, too.
There you go. Yes, tell your senator to support Carl Levin in that. Amen. Coming up on Monday, I'll be challenging conservative presidential candidate John Cox, who says liberals are pushing through an anti-Christian hate bill. I'll be explaining that the bill has nothing to do with Christians and it's all about civil rights. Michael Waldman is here on the myth of voter fraud, the firing of U.S. attorneys, and as always, the best of the rest of news and your calls. Have a great Good Friday, happy, good Passover, all holidays. Have a great time. Thanks so much for being with us, and a safe weekend. And remember, democracy starts with you. Tag, you're it. See you on Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.